The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Tony Payne and Spencer Hager. And this is a good show. I'm excited to get into this. Everybody thinks they're kind of winding down from tax season. Big, nice, long stretch, breathing room. But then we have new checklists, right? We got to start out right. So Today's topic is financial spring cleaning. What to do after tax season? And I can tell you right now that this is not on the average person's radar.
Right?
It is on yours, but it's not on somebody like ours. So let's... Let's talk about it.
All right. Yeah, spring cleaning and finances are kind of fun. Usually it involves going through a lot of papers, trying to get web access to things, guessing at old passwords. You know, if I think about spring cleaning in that sense, it all starts with getting data together and organizing a little bit, but find out what's there.
No washing windows.
No, it sounds so exciting. No, this is great. I'm ready.
Spring cleaning, Washing windows and cleaning baseboards to me.
It's the show that people didn't know they wanted, but they're getting it.
Exactly. All right. First discussion point I want to go into is auditing your business structure with fresh eyes. So should somebody kind of switch, let's say, from an LLC to an S-Corp now that their profits hit a certain point? Is that something like getting right into it that
should
be on the
radar? There's benefits there sometimes. I won't even go there, but to say, what does it depend on? What matters in that discussion? Well, the idea is it matters how much are you making? What's a reasonable salary? Because the form of income, is it salary? Is it a dividend? Those can be taxed differently or treated differently. So depending upon how much you're making, what a fair and reasonable salary is, there might be a way to say, you know what, I'm this entity now, it might make sense, just change the entity. Not who I'm billing, not what I'm billing, not what I'm doing, but just by changing the entity and paying myself in a different way by working with an accountant, heck, I'm going to keep more of my own money because it's coming in a different stream. So that's the example I think of there.
Yeah, typically, I guess taking a step back, usually when I'm doing like the financial spring cleaning, you're just really looking at how your taxes came back. So if you're a business owner, there's probably a significant chance that you didn't file by April 15th to begin with, right? You may have gone on extension and pushed it out to the fall. But if you did file, I'd first probably just start with looking at last year's numbers and try and ask yourself, is it going to be any different for this upcoming year? Because sometimes it's a one-off when the profit goes, or on top of that, it could just be like you may have some capital improvements, things you have to do if you have to buy equipment for your business, things that are going to lower your profit on paper. So I would start there, just say, okay, how much profit was it? What does that do to your tax bill? And looking ahead to the rest of this year, since it's still early on in 2025 or whatever year it is, you know, is it going to change based on some of those expenses you need to incur, because that may affect it.
And that's a really good point, Spencer, because it's neat. You kind of go from the reporting phase, January through April, getting all your documents, doing your numbers, getting receipts together. And if you stop there, well, then you're missing the whole cycle, and then you're chasing your tail again next year in January. But what you just said, Spencer, was do a little planning. You know, you just got your numbers, you know what you had, you know what you made. If this is the year I need to make equipment purchases, or maybe I put it off another year, or I'm renegotiating contracts and, hey, I've almost got too much work, I can charge more and see if that goes. And if not, I'm in a good position rather than, hey, I'll take everything I can get. Now I'm stretched thin later in the year. So that planning is really important, being able to go through and say, yeah, now that I've had some rainy days, because that's the point of spring cleaning, right? It's rainy, you're inside. You're stuck inside with the gray. Put it to good use doing a little paperwork.
Yeah. I'm just sorry, since you wanted to jump right into it, I'd also just say make sure you know what converting to an S-Corp entails, because, again, especially like depending if you have multiple employees or it's just you regardless, there's typically a little bit that comes with it as far as like starting to run payroll and things like that. How much do you pay yourself as a salary versus distributions? Kind of what Tony said. Again, your accountant will help you out with that. But I think a lot of people these days just hear, oh, you know, become an S-Corp, you'll save taxes. And that's kind of the drive-by you get on Instagram and Reddit and things like that. Just make sure, you know, it is going to be a little bit more legwork. You may have to get a few new people into the mix as far as doing a couple things for the business, which isn't bad, but it's a little bit of an undertaking.
I wish it was as easy as TikTok Financial.
Man. It's coming. It's coming.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, so what you're saying is that the synopsis is after you file, it's just kind of smart to check the current setup and still, you know, make sure things, you know, still fits the income and the goals, I guess, overall, right?
Project it ahead, talk with your whoever your tax professional is, and then just make sure you know all that goes into it is kind of the broad three steps.
In a best case scenario, you've been doing well. You're doing great. You set up a retirement plan to save money, defer taxes for later. Heck, I made so much. I maxed out my retirement plan. Is there another one I could open that has a higher limit? That's the kind of thing, too. If you're not planning, you're just reacting. It's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. You might be leaving money on the table.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that starts, too, by looking at the tax return. I mean, I know personally that phone call, that dreaded phone call from the CPA to see what the damage is. You know, do I owe? Am I going to get anything back? And that dance that I have spent years creating this dance of having just enough taken out so we're not over, we're not getting too much back and we're not owing. So how do people look for missed opportunities at this point in the game? By looking at the tax return, I guess.
Yeah, I guess you start with the basic one. Just did you owe a massive amount versus a refund? That's usually where I always start. And then if you owed and it was enough, you could even get a penalty on top of it. That's usually a basic one. And then kind of reverse engineer it from there. I mean, unfortunately, this is not a plug necessarily, but it feels like these days, like if you don't know what you're looking for, you don't really know the opportunity, which ultimately comes down to knowing the tax code, which if you're not a CPA,
right?
You're
I mean,
the
industry. Average person, I mean, my CPA told me to have a little bit more taken out of my income. Oh, how do you know? How do you know what to do?
Exactly.
How to take out?
And I would never want to besmirch anyone, but you know, these days, you know, especially you've probably read an article on it. A lot of tax professionals are just really bogged down. So, you're, at least in my experience, and everyone's is different, you're probably not going to get through your filing and then necessarily have someone sit down and coach you through, here's everything you can do different. Maybe if you're paying a good fee or if you're a business owner, they will, and that's awesome if they do. But you almost need a third party, which is, you know, generally the role we try to play and hopefully others do of, hey, maybe you should consider this and run it by the tax professional. You almost have to prompt a little bit, and that's tough if you're the individual, you know, working, family, business potentially, and trying to understand the tax code. It's a lot.
You said you didn't want to besmirch anybody there.
I would
Spencer.
Never.
You're so nice.
Never.
You're so kind. Let me say it a different way then. I'll go there.
Besmirch away.
I love my friends in accounting. I do. They're great people. They're kind of uptight here or there, but they're good people. But I can't help but think of them as the bean counter versus the bean planter. And the bean planter, if you think about that, where you put your seeds, how many you plant, what they're going to grow into, is that really for the bean counter? No, that's the bean counter's job, to count the beans, literally. But planting where they're planted, how they're harvested, where they grow, what your goals are, how much you want to make, why is that on the bean counter? It's not, but most people think of, well, that's the financial person. That's the financial person.
Yeah.
But that's their role, is counting the beans, not planting where they go.
Yeah, there are.
You like that one, Spencer.
Yeah.
That's actually a great analogy. You'd be a good teacher.
Uh-oh.
Have you ever been told that?
No. I've always been told those who can do and those who can't teach.
Oh!
But that's what I've been told, and I don't know that to
I've
be true.
I've heard that before, but one of the highest compliments you can be paid is that you're very good at translating information.
You
relaying
read
information.
Between the lines,
and
to
say for my good friend Tony, we would never besmirch teachers either. We do
no,
appreciate
it. We love our teachers.
Yeah. Now you know that. You got it.
All right. Jumping back in, let's talk about contributions and withholdings, because this is sort of aligns with the same conversation as, you know, what the tax return reveals. Most, I think the average person just kind of, they sit down, they fill out their employment information, and those questions come up, and they don't know how much to have withheld. What do I do? Which box do I check here? So what advice, and again, you know, this is a good question for an accountant, you know, not necessarily us on this very specific side of things, but overarching, if your client comes to you and wants to understand more about that, how do you guide them?
Well, I really am latching to what Spencer said there earlier, and it's the idea that it's not to talk down to anybody or anything like that, but there's a reason why professionals exist in this area. If you don't know what you're looking for, what the opportunities are, you're starting at maybe an entry level, you know, that on-the-job training we talked about, very costly. And if you're doing that with your finances, learning on the job, mistakes will be made. You'll get some experience. But the value add of having that professional accountant or advisor, that's where you get that, I'll say, that wisdom of years and years, and they've already done this before. They've seen it with other families. So when you're really trying to tie together taxes, my business, my goals, that's where, again, it just feels like there's so much out there that we could do a good job, a decent job talking and teaching about a couple areas, but there's just so much that's specific to your situation, whether you go right or left, that hopefully what we're trying to do is, here's some questions for you to ask your advisor. Here's things to consider, rather than maybe proposing a bunch of solutions here, because this world's just so wide open that, you know, to sit here and say this is the solution in this scenario, I think we'd be doing a disservice almost, rather than, you know, here's some considerations, here's some questions to ask. So when we're in this tax world, if you're wondering, you know, when are they getting to the good stuff? Where's the strategy? There's a reason why we're not laying that out as directly, because there usually is a right or left turn that's involved before you get there.
Can we give people a short list of what kinds of things factor into their withholding?
Yeah. Are you married? I mean, without coaching through a W-4, which is the form that you use if you're a W-2 employee for tax withholdings, I'm not going to do it on the podcast, but are you single or married? Do you have children? And then again, what your income is also dictates how applicable that is. But, you know, turn one of those switches and it impacts how, you know, withholding more, withholding less. And what I was going to say is, if you know a set dollar amount, you want to withhold more, like you've done your own analysis, you want to withhold more, it's super easy to increase on the W-4. It gives you the option to put a set dollar amount that you want to increase. It does not give you the option to decrease. Like, you can't say, I want to withhold by an extra $500 per, at least the last time I looked at a W-4. So it's easy to increase very precisely. It's tough to do it to decrease. So that's generally it. And again, sometimes because of how wonky they can be, it's a technical term. If you want to decrease by $5,000, you almost have to plug and play with it. So I'll say that, and then I kind of prefer to switch from that. I would just say to the contribution point, because you mentioned that at the beginning, like, should you do additional retirement plan contributions and things like that?
Yeah, that was kind of the next place I was going.
Is
so
that
that's a great
there?
Yeah, go ahead and segue into
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I despise generalizing and like punting on that, but I do feel like, going back to what we always say, like, you have to tie everything together. It hasn't happened as much recently, but it felt like years in a row, every time you'd get up to like April 10th or April 8th, and clients would reach out or people would reach out just saying, hey, my CPA told me if I put in $7,000 to my IRA, it'll reduce my tax bill by $2,000. Shouldn't I do it? And that's kind of that's all they tell you.
That's a great analogy and a great thing to bring up, because I've heard it before.
Yeah. And so I almost always had to pull people back off the ledge, like, you know, yes, you could do it and you'll save the $2,000, but do you need to save it? Do you need to save that tax, you know, of $2,000? And no matter how you cut it, you put $7,000 in to save two, you're out $5,000. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So again, that kind of goes back to doing the overall analysis. Hopefully I have someone who can help you there, because oftentimes when I would get the question, I'd say, no, you know, we talked about the new car you need to buy, paying down the debt, saving more for kids' college. You know, let's focus on that. Don't get so caught in the weeds of the $2,000 saved. But again, I think that ties into January to April, and people usually don't get the documents until February, March, and they're just getting the message a week before tax filing, and they just feel, get it done, get off the list and forget.
Right.
They don't really do the analysis.
I'll go with that even a little further, because I've seen it, especially again in the trades or industries where you're a business owner and there's equipment or assets involved. You have that accounting person tell you, you've got this tax bill, and if you weren't planning on it or doing your numbers throughout the year, well, then the solution becomes buy a piece of equipment, buy a vehicle, buy a toy, whatever. And yes, you may lower a tax bill by that depreciation factor, but at the same time, like like you said, Spencer, at least with the IRA contribution, while you're out that money you put in there, ostensibly it's growing, it's still invested. If you just buy equipment or something that depreciates or some kind of thing to knock it off in the meantime, well, that's not going to be worth anything when you retire. If anything, you might have to recapture the taxes when you get rid of that old truck or that old mower or whatever. Yeah. So again, the idea of, well, I need to lower my tax bill, I got to buy something, that's where hopefully if you're planning ahead, maybe it's a retirement contribution, maybe you have the money, maybe you've already planned the estimated payments, but to think that I have to buy something to lower the bill, that gets dangerous.
Yeah, and I think that is on the radar for most people, is how to lower my taxable income at the end, but they wait until the last minute to do it instead of starting proactively at the beginning of the year to plan those out, at least from my perspective.
No, definitely. That's the world we live in, I think, especially when some things you could only do January to December 31st, and if you're not looking at it until February or March, you're done.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just I haven't heard the term in a while, actually, but we used to always say it was the whole, like, don't let the tax tail wag the economic dog. I think reality is we just are in a world where most prevailing sentiment is save the tax, and no one really plays it past that point.
Nobody really understands it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it's save the tax equals
the fear-mongering is all over social media, but nobody really understands what that means.
And you're hitting a button with me, so I'm going to go there. You pressed it. If the whole game is lower the tax bill, think about what you're giving up. And I know I've gone on this rant before, but I'm just tired. I see so many seniors, my grandma's peers, people in the nursing home where a spouse ran the family finances. Maybe they were a business owner. Maybe they were an investor. And they did all these wild kind of things. Maybe they were successful. But by lowering income every single year, by having no reported income, your spouse ends up with next to nothing for Social Security, especially if they were a stay-at-home person that just took, not just, but managed a household, did all the work there necessary, and you're the wild person out there listening to your accountant, never including your spouse, and this year we paid nothing in taxes, we got this refund, and lo and behold, that 89-year-old is sitting there with $200 a month for Social Security, and you're wondering, how is this even possible? How does this happen? And that's the stuff that fires, you can hear it in my voice, I'm sorry, but this is the stuff where I do what we do, because no, paying the tax bill isn't the worst thing in the world. You get to borrow more money. You get to buy a house. You get credit. You get to buy sufficient disability insurance. All these things add up because, hey, I had to have real income. And if I'm a business owner and I want to expand, well, where's your loan potential? Where's your great credit score? If you're deducting everything under the sun, buying a bunch of junk, that doesn't really happen. So the idea of, yes, I'm in the trades. I'm a savvy person. I work with my hands. That's awesome. That's great. That's noble. That's a way to build a business. But the idea of, hey, do I always have to buy more equipment versus save or be in the market? That's where that having a trusted person where sometimes the market's scary, that's not the world you live in, but that might be the best course versus, you know, buying another tiller or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. I never even thought about that. That's really relevant. Nobody talks about that.
No, I get the privilege. My grandmother's 91, and to be able to go around and meet with some of her friends and talk and hear some of these scenarios and think of how lucky, or not even lucky, it's planning too, but how blessed we are with having the awareness to do these things that, you know what, with all great intents, you raised the kids well, you did great, you were a great person, but you didn't have this piece together, and now you're in your 80s or 90s and you're really struggling. Mm-hmm. All these inflation increases just eating your pocket every month. That's the people that, you know, if we can prevent that and tell you there's a good reason to be proud about paying that tax bill, I'd love to be that voice. Be proud when you write that $100,000 check.
Tony's putting on his Uncle Sam cap right now.
They don't need more help. I'm not saying you know, I'm just saying at least you can maybe do it with a smile if you're doing it.
Yeah.
You were talking about business ownership, and this came across my screen when we were kind of putting the outline together, and many, many small businesses or individuals, you know, are looking to get out of business, out of partnerships, or maybe create a succession. What does that look like at the very beginning of the year as somebody's thinking about that from the tax perspective? Is there a great sweet spot to do that in the middle of the year, for beginning of the year, or does it matter?
Just developing the plan?
Exit strategies.
Yeah, I would probably take a step back from the taxes. That's a lot. But I would just, you know, most business owners just start with the valuation. Like, majority of people who own a business think they know what it's worth, but they don't really know what it's worth. So I would just start there. You know, who do you want to pass it to? Is it to an employee? Is it to someone you know? Or is it just to an outside third party that you're trying to get off the list? And then just finding out, you know, what's a fair price for your business, right? Because that's going to drive the whole tax conversation. So, like I said, I think we all, as business owners, think we know what it is, but you don't really until you look under the hood and have it evaluated. So I would just start there and then go from there.
Yeah. This one's a really exciting one too, because if you think about it, you've done well, your business is growing, all that appreciation all along the way. Now what? And with planning, doing it right along the way, hopefully you're thinking about that succession plan early on. You know, it usually starts, identify the people, identify your goals. Spencer, like you said, build the business up, have the revenue, be able to manage it. But also along the way, you've got to be grooming the people, have the people involved, or know that group that you're going to go to. Because when you do that, you get a lot more tax flexibility. Because the worst thing would be, hey, you're ready to retire. You want to give it on to maybe family members in this case. Maybe you want your kids to take over. Do you sell it to them? Then you have to pay the taxes? Do you just have to wait until you die and they inherit it and they don't get control? They're never president. They feel like you're just keeping the strings on them and it's all about taxes and employees are confused as to who's the real boss and this and that. That all plays in that if you're thinking ahead of time and you're being strategic, not only does it lower your tax bill, but it makes the transition better. So that's the other part. Maybe it is partial ownership earlier on. Maybe it's given a 1% or 2.5% share to say, hey, you're in the fold. Let's see how this goes. And as you continue growing, I can always sell or give you more shares. But then you're helping manage the tax bill along the way.
And another segue to that is income streams and tax efficiency. How does that play into that conversation? If you're a business owner and you've got employees and you're thinking about, you know, the tax situation when you're creating a succession.
Yeah, taking that in a different direction, maybe it's knowing that you have to gross things up. Because if I'm a business owner and I think of $1 million of revenue, what is that after taxes and expenses? So I hear a lot from business, I made $100,000, I made $10,000, whatever. Was that really what you made, or is that the gross revenue that came in?
Yeah.
So when you think about doing some of those numbers and now getting in the taxes or succession planning, I think that's pretty important.
Yeah.
So we talk a lot about charitable giving, and tax time is a great time to be charitable. And we like to think that that's not the reason behind giving, of course,
yeah.
But
yep.
It's an opportunity. So how does somebody best evaluate at the beginning of the year their charitable strategies, you know, moving forward?
One of them, you said it, planning ahead, not just reacting when you see somebody out ringing the bell saying, I feel bad today or I feel good today, but having a plan of what your charitable goals are.
Yeah, agreed. That's what I was going to say. Pretty much just exactly know what you're going to give or what you'd like to give. And then from there, it just drives, is there much wiggle room? Reality is most people right now, standard deduction, if you're married, filing joints, $30,000 for 2025. And just quick recap, you've got like state and local income tax, which includes your property tax, mortgage interest, and charitable giving. Add the three up. That's what most people have. If you're above 30 or you're close to it, there could be some wiggle room. If you don't have a mortgage and you don't give much to charity, there's probably not much there. So I'd say basic thing is just run the numbers, see if you're close to itemizing, and then Tony's point, know what your goal is to give, and then there could be some strategies, but I'd say that's a very brief answer, but it's tough to go too deep on the podcast.
I'll give you a strategy. You want
sure.
some strategy?
Sure.
You want some tax savings here? Let's get into one. Let's say I sold my business, did well, did great, 30 years of great bricklaying, and now I'm ready to get out. What's the tax bill? What do I do there? So the idea of where am I in this? You know, if I've sold this, or I'm sorry, pardon me, if I've built this all along the way and it's all gains, what am I looking at for taxes? Am I looking at from zero to nothing or zero to what it's worth? Am I looking at, you know what do I sell? How much do I sell? That's my tax bill. All those are different angles of negotiating your taxes when you're exiting. So the earlier you plan it, the better.
That sound like a specific strategy?
No.
I was going to say the same thing, actually.
Oh, yeah?
I was going to suggest
all right,
the same thing.
Here you go, Spencer.
Yeah, you can be a teacher, too. This is great.
Let's do it, then.
All right.
You sold your business for $1 million. I'll give you the real one. I was toying with you.
You want a real strategy?
Yeah, you want the real one?
2 minutes of just generalization, but no.
I knew I'd get you with that one. Yeah. So, again, we're talking about donor-advised funds. A real thing, real topic right now. You go ahead and have your wonderful business. You sold it. You could pay all that tax in 1 year and then give your charity what you were going to give anyway. You know what? I sold my business. I'm giving 10 grand to the church anyway. That's what I do. Or you could use this donor-advised fund, sell the business, have part of the proceeds go into the donor-advised fund. It's more than 10 grand, so it's more than what you were going to give in 1 year, but the money doesn't all have to come out at once. So if I sold a life's work of business all at once, I could have part of it go in that donor-advised fund. For the next 30 years in retirement, I cut my church check, 10 grand, it's all coming out tax-free. I got my deduction in that 1 year, that one big year of income, and the rest of the time I'm benefiting where that standard deduction, everything Spencer mentioned, it doesn't come into play anymore. So I already got my benefit by using that specific detailed strategy. Right, Spencer?
Oh, it's fantastic.
All right. I tried to pull it together for you.
Yeah, no, it's great.
All right.
That's strategery.
And it is. I like that word. Yeah. And again, everyone's different. Of course, consult a CPA, et cetera. But the idea of I had to know that existed to ask the CPA about that's why we're here.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. So as I was doing my research for this topic, something came across that talked about big life events, and I thought, how does a big life event impact taxation at the beginning of the year? What can we put on the radar?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It depends on the life event. I'm trying to think of one. Most of the ones I think of are impromptu, like windfalls, and unfortunately, you just don't really see them coming.
An early year divorce will do it, won't it?
I'll give you some.
If you get an early year divorce, that's going to change your tax strategy.
Job changes. You know it's coming. Yeah.
Business sales, real estate purchases, liquidity events, growing family.
Yeah, I'm answering it. These are all potential opportunities. If you got divorced, that you've got to change your taxes. If you have a kid, you've got to change it. These are the early year things of if I retire in January and I don't have that income the rest of the year, these are the kinds of things we're meeting with. You have that early year big life change. And you know what? In every other year when I had all 12 months of raising a child or being married or my deductions, well, that was fine. But when your year changes in the first quarter or the first half, whatever it is, well, then that's going to involve changing your strategy.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
To the layperson, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, that's what we're after. Yeah. That's who we're talking to.
Yeah. Yeah, again, you just have to check your income with some of that stuff. Like the divorce is obviously going to affect it. You get married, it changes your deduction. You have kids, depending on your income level, you get some credits that lower what you owe. And then I was thinking, too, like if you unfortunately had a family member or someone pass away or something like that, and you're inheriting some assets, that's going to tie into your tax bill. So tough to see that one coming, but if it happens early in the year, you can definitely get ahead of the curve and plan around it, see how it's going to change the plan. If it happens at the end of the year, you're kind of stuck. But again, I think that all just goes into taking inventory.
Go ahead.
No, another one I think of, you had a major health event or medical event. You already blew through your deductible. You have other things that may be coming in the next couple years. So the idea of at what point do my medical expenses become deductible? Well, again, that's detailed planning. You got to keep track of it. Not everybody does. But when you've had a tremendous January, February, and you're really going through it and the bills are starting to come in, heck, maybe this is the year I go and do extra things in November, December, because I've already hit my deductible. I'm hit my out-of-pocket. You know, I might even be able to make some of these deductible expenses, especially if I've got a family or a spouse and others where I could really stack it all up in 1 year. So that's another early year kind of thing that, you know what, if that's not my norm and that happened now, I should probably pay more attention to that because there might be an opportunity.
Yeah.
Would that apply to somebody, like say, the way that they're paid? So somebody's paid, you know, by bonuses or commission. Mm-hmm. Is that something that is relevant here?
In a sense, not really the method of the
inheritance.
Payment. Yeah, that's different, for sure. That one would be different. And again, if you had a job change, Let's say you were used to being paid 1099. It's your business, and now they hired you full-time, and you have W-2 withholdings. That's definitely something different from the tax perspective. But, you know, this year's bonus is lower than last year's. That might even play in if you're making estimated payments or you've synchronized withholding with a spouse. So, that again, this is where you have to do that spring cleaning of get the pay stubs, get the tax return,
get the documents,
get
together.
The details, you know, that rainy day activity there. That's what leads to the detailed planning being available.
Yep.
So save the windows, start vetting documents January 1.
Yeah, or definitely in April whenever you get your return wrapped up.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. Fantastic. Thanks, guys. This has been enlightening. We appreciate your time today. We hope you'll keep tuning in. Please share with your friends, and we'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.